It came about for a third year. The double celebration of her birthday, and a day or two later, the tea dance after work. No one used to know when her birthday was. Not until Mr. Hunter came to take up a big job in personnel and did some ferreting about in the employees' files. Strangely, it had never irked her that he should know. It flattered her that he should have troubled, and he did it so nicely. Nobody else on the fifth floor was so honoured, but she was the longest-serving in accounts. When he'd done it for the first time, 3 years ago now, it had come as such a pleasant surprise in her otherwise still-water life. A birthday card with a tasteful illustration, a garland of springtime flowers, a polite message penned inside, respectful as was seemly from a man 10 or 12 years younger than herself, in his early 30s still, and also a little box of Swiss chocolates. The first time he suggested it, after she'd found the card and the box of chocolates on her desk, she'd been lost for words. A tea dance, did you say? It was a term that belonged to her late mother's vocabulary. He told her they were held once a fortnight in a hall in Woking. At first, she couldn't get a focus when he'd said to her, Woking. It's not very grand, he apologised. Indeed, it wasn't grand. She saw that for herself when she allowed him to take her. Her heart was in her mouth with the exhilaration of a good-looking man leading her up the flight of steps to the door. The strands of grey in his hair gave him a distinguished grace in her eyes. Even so, he seemed a whole generation away from her. And how she wished she looked sprightlier, less worn, and wearing an outfit from another woman's wardrobe instead of her own. She looked and felt so staid arriving that first time, exactly like an office bookkeeper, and it had depressed her. But once they were inside the tatty hall, her ears stung with the brash music from the band on the platform, and her eyes were so busy adjusting to the different speeds of the bodies on the dance floor that she hadn't had much time to think about herself and what she was doing in a place like this. When they'd seated her and gone off to fetch their tea on a tray, she happened to glance over at him and saw that he was looking back at her very thoughtfully and intently. Immediately a boyish grin lit up his face, and she started to tug at her beads and the lapels of her Welsh tapestry suit. Why, afterwards, did the other women seem to be watching her? Were they puzzling the relationship out? What attracted a nice-looking man in a smartly cut business suit to someone of their age group, like her? They must have presumed she was an older relative he was entertaining under sufferance, or worse, he was a kind of gigolo she'd hired for this travesty performance of young love. It was rather a seedy place, admittedly. Shriveled balloons were nailed to the walls, the dancers' feet trailed lengths of dirty pink ribbon, the hall smelt of turpentine dip from the evening art classes. Naturally, nothing had happened, although, she reflected afterwards, it wasn't beyond the bounds of possibility that it could have. So little seemed impossible in this world. When she visited her friend Gracie, who used to work beside her on the books till she took lame, she told her he'd given her a very pleasant afternoon. Gracie had looked sceptical at that, 2 years in succession. She had to be careful not to stress the physical side, the dancing, to Gracie, in case it should seem tactless. But inside her own head, she knew the dancing was the most beautiful part of it. He, 30-something, but with his young boy's face, greying only very slowly at the temples. She, on the wrong side of 45, and wishing she was wearing a striking red or yellow dress, something rash, to distract him, to keep his eyes away from the lines on her face, the lines like spokes round her eyes, and creases at the corners of her mouth she couldn't lipstick over. Time and again, while the band played, she caught him studying her with that same considering, almost lowering expression on his face. This year, she reacted with no less surprise on her birthday, her 47th, when again he went through the formality of suggesting the tea dance. "What a lovely idea," she said, cradling her card and the identical little box of chocolates. All she'd seen of him since last year was when they passed on the stairs or met in the canteen queue. Recently, a rumour had passed round the building that Colin Hunter was going to become a married man. But nothing had come of the story, and to her relief, it seemed to have been forgotten about. "So eligible, too," was all she could think, as she finished off her preparations in the fifth-floor ladies after the last of her colleagues had gone off home for the day. "How ridiculous," she said to herself, skimming down the stairs to neutral second floor to meet him. "I couldn't have run down the stairs like this 5 years ago." This, in spite of the recent turmoil in the office, as a very brisk and efficient young executive type called Ms. McKay had joined her department to supervise the auditing and was forever criticising the old ways they'd lived with for donkey's years. "Never mind," she told herself, as she manoeuvred into the passenger seat of his low-slung car and let him shut the door for her. The perfect gentleman. He seemed more abstracted this year, watching himself in the driving mirror, then remembering her and turning round with a bright smile. Oh dear, there's something else he'd rather be doing, she realised. "Have I rushed you?" he asked. "No. No, not at all." She heard the same false brightness in her own voice. She smiled at him. He looked awkward and lifted his eyes to the driving mirror. "Goodness," she thought, "what have I done? Is that what they mean by a come-hither smile that I gave him?" He seemed reserved in the dance hall. This year it all felt strange. When they danced, they couldn't keep in step. She didn't recognise the tunes. The radiator must have been turned up full, it was so hot. In the big dusty mirror at the back of the room, and this really confused her, she saw she was looking more youthful than last time. Much. She'd lost half a stone in 3 months. She'd spent £80 on a new candy-striped dress from Peter Jones and another £15 plus tip in Mark's salon with, a daring experiment, the new cutter. They took their third dance round the floor, a waltz. Lois, he'd never used her Christian name before. Yes? She'd once read in a magazine that certain men crave mother figures, the older woman. Yes? This is terribly difficult for me. She didn't know how her legs were holding her up. Her fingers flexed on the cloth on his back. Lois, the thing is, I know you'll take this with composure. We always have behaved with... He was getting tongue-tied. I didn't know how to put this. Should she help him? Was she right, imagining the thing she was? You see, times are difficult for everyone. And we know what we owe to you after all this time. We won't be ungenerous. We... She stopped moving. It was the room that continued to spin. Quite frankly, we find we're overstaffed. Every business is having to cut down, you know that. We think it's the young ones who should be given a chance. It's not easy for them either. She immediately understood. Oh, I see the sense. She couldn't believe the calm of her voice. Shall we step off now? Of course. You'll want to sit down. No, not really. If you could... Her eyes were mistily looking over towards the door. Run you home? Yes, certainly. He positively bounded off to the cloakroom for her raincoat. In the car, his explanation laid everything bare to her. He'd known when he joined the company 3 years ago what had to be done. He didn't mention to her their annual ritual, but he told her he'd been looking for ways all this time. I just hadn't the guts, he said. Sorry. That's not a word to use to a lady, is it? An older woman, he meant. She smiled, a watery, inadequate smile. We shall be generous. She said, thank you, and crossed her gloved hands on her lap. Trying to focus on the street through the windscreen, she couldn't, and her eyes dropped to the tray under the dashboard. A woman's purse, she noticed, in this bachelor's car, left behind by someone. And how much it would have interested her a few months ago to speculate by whom. 20 seconds, half a minute later, attempting to swallow the tears, she remembered a purse just like it sat about in Mrs. McKay's room whenever she was summoned to answer some petty complaint. Maybe, in time, she would feel glad she was no longer a part of that life. Her companion was looking at her. I hope it means we can still... Next year? She sat back in the seat. She half closed her eyes to consider, but really she had no doubts about it. We have to make way for the young, she repeated him, trying to keep the bitterness out of her voice. Don't they say the knack is knowing how to time your exit? He changed gears, comforting her with more words. Getting out when the going's good. Once that voice had made her toes curl up in her shoes. I think... She was weighing her words. I think my tea and dancing days are over now. She delivered her judgment as flatly as she could. But today was also her birthday, and she had to allow herself an indulgence just once in every year. So, in the silence afterwards, she let her eyes close completely shut, and imagined an arrow tipped with venom winging its way through the open doorway into Ms. McKay's office. And with satisfaction she watched as its journey ended and it lodged there in that unscrupulous and complicitous woman's heart.